Yeah, that's not a problem.
Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event June 21st at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our presenters, Michael Macchiarlotti. Michael is a PhD candidate in biostatistics at the University of Oklahoma. And at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Michael will deliver a talk titled Longitudinal Changes in Male Distance Running Performance. Michael, welcome.
Hey, great to meet you. And it's good talking with you for the podcast.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks for joining me. So anyway, looking at your CV, you've got a pretty diverse academic background. I see economics, biology, mathematics, biostatistics. Tell me about what led you to these areas.
Well, I guess probably like most undergraduates, they don't know what they're going to do. So I actually started off as a biology major, and my father is a physician. I think I intended to go to medical school, or at least had strong inklings about it. As I kind of moved along with school, I actually picked up a major in economics, and in realizing that I wanted to study economics, I had to study math. So that's kind of how those all kind of got mixed together. And so when I went to grad, I actually first went to graduate school for economics at University of Oregon. And when I was there, I had a great time. And I think when I was there, I just realized that I was probably better at the statistics component of it. So yeah, at that point, I just kind of headed in a different direction and started studying pure statistics a little bit more. And I think the biostat, as I said, it seems eclectic, but you know, being an undergrad, you just don't know what you're going to do. You go to graduate school, get a little bit better understanding. And then I really did like the biological aspect of things. So biostat just seemed like a happy marriage between kind of where I started and what I was interested in. So.
Okay. Great, great. So how did you then veer into sports? I kind of picked up that you've just started this fairly recently, and what inspired you in that area, and what specific areas have you gotten into?
Yeah, so I think the sports analytics was kind of derived out of two things. So I've been a community college instructor, so primarily teaching things like statistics. So I wanted to have applied examples. So I had kind of always done like small examples in sports analytics, but when I'm definitely an avid sports fan, and then I've participated in sports in high school and college. So, you know, as I started to get deeper and deeper into statistics, so I think I would call myself a practicing statistician, you know, over 15 years now. I think it just got to the point where I'd listen to things like in sports talk radio and stuff like that, and I was like, I know that I do this in class. I know this area of sports analytics that's out there. I'm tired of listening to what people have to say about certain things, and I want to go and explore it. And I think that, you know, by being a statistician, you're given the tools to actually explore the data to go in and answer interesting questions. So, I'm doing biostat. I'm definitely heavily into the health science world, but I'm still really interested in sports. So kind of like the last couple of years, I just started to get into it. And I had a great advisor that said, hey, if you're interested in this, someone that I had done a project with before, she just kind of suggested it. So I kind of started looking into it. And yeah, the last couple of years started to do more of it. So it's really how I got into it.
So you mentioned applied examples. Do you have any of those that come to mind that you did with your teaching at the community college?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like even this last semester. So I don't know if anyone follows basketball, but the Thunder, they had their little experiment with Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook, and then some of the other people. So on sports radio here, a lot of people are questioning whether the team was a success or not. And they'll give you a litany of reasons. So what I decided to do as we started to getting towards like inferential statistics was I actually got the plus minus, the average, the plus minus for each game, and then got them the values for each season. And I said, well, let's go and evaluate this statement. The Thunder weren't successful or this year wasn't as successful. And I said, let's actually use metrics to go in and look at this. So the first thing we did is do a simple t-test on just the plus minus values between the two different years. And, you know, showed them that there was a statistical difference that even though they did only win one more game, but when they did win, they won by more points. So I thought that was interesting to show them and say, well, by this metric, we could go in and say, yep, they only won one more game, but they won on average by more points each game. So then when we kind of started tracking into regression, the next question was, well, why did they win by more points? So going in and showing what variables were associated with, the plus minus values in a regression setting. And since it's only a principles class, I just really use just basic linear regression. But, you know, yeah, going in and showing them that they can actually use statistics to go in and answer interesting questions. And I think sports, as I said, I'm interested in sports, but I think it's fairly ubiquitous. Like a lot of people, they have some passion. And I think sports is kind of an intersection for a lot of people where, you know, I know you noted that I'm doing a running paper, but I have interests outside of running and it just gets you talking about analytics, which I'm just interested in overall. So it's just interesting to me. So, yeah.
Okay. So here's a thunder based statistics question. All right. So okay. Last year, Russell Westbrook averages a triple double, right?
Yep.
First time since Oscar Robertson did it. Very, very big, right?
Yep.
Yeah, at some point, somebody said, isn't it ridiculous that we are basing his whole MVP candidacy around a pretty arbitrary threshold of stats that you've got, yep, you know, 10 or more, really, assists and rebounds per game. What is it about that number that makes it so impressive? And I think it's a valid question. I mean, as much as it did on the surface, seem very, very impressive. Just give me your statistician's take on just how impressive that is to average a triple-double in the NBA.
I mean, it is. I mean, I should probably, like, here's my disclosure statement. I'm a season ticket holder, so I like Russell Westbrook, let's put it that way. But it's the fact that you've only had two people throughout history to do that, and then when you actually gain an appreciation for how hard is it really to get like something like 10 assists or 10 rebounds. It is really a statistical anomaly. You know, I think that's why the first time that he did it, people were so impressed. With that being said, I mean, I do understand, you know, like in sports analytics, you try to answer interesting and nuanced questions. So I think that it's absolutely the case that if someone says, well, does that translate into greater team success? I mean, that would be something you would want to know. And then the question of, I think, you know, this second year that he did it, you know, is he padding his statistics? Like, I think sometimes people go in and they say, well, he averaged 10 rebounds, but, you know, are people deferring to, you know, you got two guys going up for a rebound. Are they deferring to him? And I think the interesting thing to me, so yes, it's an absolute statistical anomaly, you know, kind of bringing this back to what we want to do at the conference and why sports analytics is so important is you can answer those questions. I mean, I would say if you watch him through an entire season, I don't think his statistics are bad. He is a vortex. That's the way I would describe him. That can be good and bad because, you know, he does all these things. And I think that, something that, to me, like an offshoot of this question is all these people leave the Thunder and then they end up being really successful. Victor Oladipo. Sure. I mean, there's a litany of people that you can just actually go down the list and you're like, oh my gosh, these guys really just seem to turn it on. I think that is part and parcel because of how Russell Westbrook plays and how dominant he really is. But it's interesting. Yeah. I think it's crazy.
Watch, and I don't want to get too much further off topic, but
no, that's fine.
You brought off the Thunder, so I'm going to ask you one more.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you get the sense watching him playing again? He's a vortex. He's a physical freak. He's ferocious.
The way he
plays, right? The fire with which he plays, and yet it's also kind of undeniable that he's a pretty low efficiency player. I mean, he takes some bad shots.
He does.
He has some bad habits. Do you get the sense that anyone's ever tried to impart any analytical advice to his game?
Right. Yeah, actually, I know the interesting thing about this. So the advisor that I kind of mentioned to you before that was interested, she actually, for the ASA, she actually has been involved in the, you know, the statistics and sports group. I think one of her former students works for the data analytics group at with the Thunder. And to be, I guess it's not really that bad to talk about it now, but I applied for a job with them 3 years ago, and it's probably good that I didn't get it because I want to finish my PhD. But it was for a data analyst, and I actually got to the final round. So that was one of the things that got me interested. Not to get off topic as well, but I applied for this job, and they asked me the question, so how long have you been interested in sports analytics? And I was like, well, I have been interested in it, but I haven't really done anything formally. So I was like, about the time that I saw the job, that's about when I started to say, oh, what can we do with this? But yeah, they definitely have a data science group. As to how intertwined it is with what they do on a daily basis, I'm not so sure of, but I could hunt that information down for you. My suspicion is, probably more so than people think, but then I also think too, it's like you always have to ask the question when you have analytics, how can it be used? I don't know how those guys would practically make adjustments based on this information, but you know, it's an interesting question. I'd love to pose it to Russell myself, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a difference between just knowing these things and having ideas and actually translating that into action then too, right? That's the...
Absolutely.
So, all right, so let's get off of basketball. I derailed us too much from that. So let's talk about running, what you're going to be presenting at the conference. Before we started recording, you told me that you ran in college.
Yep.
What is it about running that lends itself well to analytics? And then we can talk a little bit more about your conference topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question because when I started deciding upon the topic, because I think I wrote you like 6 or 8 months ago, and I went to the conference at Harvard, the one in the fall there. And then I saw your conference and I was like, oh, that seems interesting too. I got to come up with something to do, but I wanted to think of something that was novel, but also something that I like. So how does analytics lend itself to running? I think it does quite a bit, but I also think that it depends on the questions you want to ask. So I saw a lot of stuff on like running performance or running training and things like this. And I thought those are very interesting, but I don't really have access to runners or running data per se that I could easily go in and do a study on. So I started thinking about things that were interesting to runners or people that were interested in, you know, like managing runners. And so this notion of running performance, but then also as a side topic, like doping data. So the study hasn't really lent itself to going in and coming up with something perfect. But that, I mean, I think it'll be a future iteration of this, like after I go and examine things a little bit more and then maybe consider more running events. But so where it stemmed from is like, what contributes to running performance on readily available or easily obtainable running metrics like age and nationality, things that people talk about a lot, but I have never seen quantified. So I thought I would answer things like that. Like, how does age affect performance? How does nationality, does venue, things like this. And then trying to link it up to, could you use those metrics to actually go in and quantify doping? And so I found a list of people that actually have had doping violations. So setting up a study inside of the data that I have to go in and say, is there a difference in these measurable things that I have that are just on a ready, like an IAF, IAF website, the International Athletic Association, International Athletic Federation, you know, where they post all this information. Could they use that information to figure these things out? So it just kind of spawned out of that. So I think that it, like, analytics lends itself readily. And I think that you just have to come up with an interesting question and see what information is out there.
Yeah. It seems to me that running really does be, I mean, if you just think of it, the most basic, every runner, serious runner, wears a watch, right? And they track their time, and they incorporate GPS data into their routes. I mean, a lot of stuff that is just, you know, coming out in team sports, tracking data and stuff like that. It does seem to really lend itself well to that. At the highest level, though, let's talk about your talk, longitudinal changes in male distance running performance. Tell us a little bit about that and how deep you went into it and what sorts of findings came out of that.
Yeah, so what I ended up doing was just going on the IAAF's website, and I just picked some events that I thought would be interesting. So like the 5K, the 10K, the half marathon, and the marathon on the track. And what I did is I just basically utilized all the information that they have. So like people that are interested in like web scraping or things like this, like learning those tools. I mean, that's essentially what I did. I just took all the information off of there and, you know, used it to answer these questions. So the things that I was exploring, so why is it longitudinal? Because I have measurements on each person over time, you know, for the different distance events. So, as I said, I don't want to get too much into the statistics of it. And it actually lends itself to like when I was trying to decide how do I define my study? Is it for experts? Is it for, you know, people that are starting off? I think it's kind of a mixture because it's an applied paper, but if you don't understand the techniques, it's obviously going to be, you know, that would be the hole that you would want to go and explore. But yeah, so I just took that data off of there from 2001 to 2017, and I had to come up with, and I just used, you know, Jack Daniel's running formula. So I did, you have to think about this. If you want to examine running performance and you've got these different events, you have to have a way to go in and compare them. So step one was just, how do I quantify running performance? So that was like how I did the first thing. And then after I quantified running performance, I used something that I think that most runners would say, you know, using something like VDOT or something like that is pretty standard, or they would say is generally accepted. Just started exploring, well, you know, I've got this age information. I've got this nationality information. I've got the venue itself, you know, how are those different variables related to the, you know, these runners' performance over time? So I did that type of analysis. And then at the very end, I wanted to link it up to doping. So what I did is I added that additional information in there on doping. And then I explored, you know, was there a difference? Now, I think one of the hard parts is I literally have thousands of data points. So for each year, for each event, I kind of arbitrarily picked some cutoffs because I don't think it's super interesting to look. I mean, if you're not looking at non-elite data, you know, I think that I wanted to look at like for doping and things like this, since that kind of generated this question, you really have to look at people that are performing at a high level. So once the IAAF really actually gives a lot of information that I was actually shocked, like in a 10K, they had information in some years, like if someone ran under 31:30 as a male, they posted that information. So you're on the world list there. But if someone was running 31:30, that's really not an elite performance. So I had to kind of make strategic decisions in some places where I had to cut stuff off. But yeah, so that's what I'm going to do. Just present the results that I found, like exploring these different things, and then just kind of show them, you know, how you can use longitudinal analysis to answer these basic questions. But okay. I think it's interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, just like every study that you perform, it probably will lead to more questions and more studies. I think that's probably what I found from this. So, I don't know. It's interesting, I think.
Perfect. Perfect. So looking forward to hearing about that. You've also done some work with golf too, right?
Yeah, so that's what I presented at Nessus.
Nessus,
yeah. Yeah, because it was the New England Sports, I always forget, yeah, Sports Symposium, something like that, but the conference that they had at Harvard. So yeah, so what I did is I looked at earnings data. So I'm also an avid golfer, so something that I've done over time, not so much as a graduate student just because I don't have as much money and don't have the time, but I kind of investigated some papers where they looked at earnings and looked at what contributed to annual earnings for golfers. And I just felt like, you know, after looking at some of the papers that they didn't analyze the data quite correctly. And you know, I guess from I guess a modern analytics standpoint, they could have used different information, even some of the more current studies. So it just kind of motivated me to go and say, well, as I said, just like with everything else, I'm a statistician. They have this data out there. Why can't I just go in and explore it and see how things were different? And I found stuff that, you know, that was different than people had found before. So I don't know. It was definitely interesting to me once again. And I think the reason that you do this stuff is to make evidence-based decisions. I saw people look at things like driving distance, and they said the driving distance was still important. And I didn't find that. I still found that driving accuracy was. So I guess I should point this out too. Like when you have data over time, you could do time series analysis, or longitudinal stuff is also really really informative as well. And I just saw these studies that didn't account for the longitudinal nature of the data, the dependence of the data over time. And I just feel like that's going to give you results that maybe aren't as robust as if you consider, you know, someone's earnings 1 year is going to definitely be related to probably their earnings the next year. So you have to consider the correlation structure between those two things. So I don't know. I definitely am still interested in finishing that off. I've got 60 to 70% of a paper just sitting there, unfortunately, that's got to be finished, but dissertation comes first, unfortunately.
Of course. You'll be interested to take in the talk that Roland Minton is presenting at our conference on the PGA Tour, and the first golf presenter we've had so far at this at our event. So
well, maybe that's great. I'll definitely check them out, and then maybe I've got some, you know, just like I said, all these studies kind of further questions, Loam. Maybe I'll have to go and present. I've got an idea for using similar data to go in and answer a different question on this.
Okay.
So yeah, it's good to know. It's a topic for next year.
There you go. So getting back to something that we talked about originally, you know, let's say you're a teacher, a lecturer, a researcher, and you want to get into sports analytics. So where would you go first? What steps would you first take to get involved in this area?
I'd really think there's two steps, because actually I think that those are good questions, but you really have to have a strong foundation in analytics itself or statistics. If you don't understand how to analyze data, then it's, even if you have good questions, it's hard to really go in and answer them. So I'd say, you know, get a really strong foundation in statistics. First step would be go in and learn those things. You know, at an undergraduate level or graduate level, I think that it's going to pay dividends later on. I think second, you know, finding other people that are interested in that. So like, you know, joining the ASA and then looking for the statistics and sports group. I think that, you know, just offers a perfect example to, you know, and a platform for people to go in and discuss things that they're interested in with other people. And I think that it also just gives you greater insight into, you know, where it can take you. So I think something that really impressed me at the Nessus conference was there were academics, there were students, and there were people from industry, and they were all just kind of interested in the same thing. So if someone went there and they had, and there were people that I think, I don't want to call them job market talks, but there were definitely people that were talking to people in industry that, you know, they were building the connections that they needed to take, you know, their academic training to then go ahead and apply that to hopefully a vocation, a job. So I think that would be the end goal.
Okay. Michael, what's one book, website, magazine, blog, email newsletter, whatever, or podcast, if you're into listening to things, what are some good content sources that you'd like to suggest?
Well, let me give you three, because they're real quick. And that, okay. I was going to say, I thought about this and I was like, God, no one's going to be interested in the running books I would tell them. So I'm not going to give you those.
But you can. We got all day.
All right. Well, let me give you these. But as I said, getting on the ASA, the statistics in sports, I think that would be step one. So if you're already in the world of stats, go in and the ASA is just so great for that. And then Google search. If you don't, Google is your friend. So aside from all the search algorithm issues, I'm not going to even get into that. I think Google has a lot of resources that are out there. And then a book that I highly recommend, An Introduction to Statistical Learning with Applications in R. So an introduction to statistical learning with applications in R. I think it's fantastic. It walks you through step by step all the different things, and it provides code. So if someone, you know, they really want to go in and kind of have, I guess, a cookbook of things to do, it's something that I found helpful as an undergrad, and even, you know, looking at it as a graduate student as well. And then
who's the author of that, Michael?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's James et al. So if they look that up, okay. And I think it's a Springer text.
Okay.
So it, and I think you can get it. As I said, if you search it out there, I think you can find it for between $20 and $40. It's just a great text.
I'll use this Google that you referenced.
This Google that no one's ever heard of.
What are the running books though?
The books, I mean, if you're interested in running, like since I ran in college and I've just been kind of a running nut for a long time, two books that I just really recommend. So a book called The Unforgiving Minute, and it's by, it's on Ron Clark. So I forget it's not an autobiography, but it's a biography. It's called The Unforgiving Minute. It's just a really tremendous book to read. You know, you really want to see what it's like to be a professional runner.
Okay.
I think that's one. And then another one is No Bugles, No Drums, and that's about Peter Snell. So these are two guys from the 60s and 70s, but they were really prolific. And I think that, I don't know, I guess that's widely considered like the golden era of running. Just kind of listening to just, you know, how these guys were, what did they do? And they had, a lot of them had full-time jobs. It was just really kind of amazing to read about. So I enjoyed it. So
great. No, I'm always looking for new stuff here. That's great. And I appreciate the tips on that. So Mike, where can people find out more about your work online?
Gosh. That was another one. I guess I feel terrible. I'm an academic Google Scholar. Okay. I mean, to be honest with you, I hope, you know, from the research that I'm doing for this, I really did do a lot of extensive background on it. I think that's something too, if I would say something, if you're going to explore research questions, make sure to do your background studies. You know, spending a month, two, or longer, obviously, I think longer is preferable. You know, really researching what's out there, what has and has not been explored, and how you think you can contribute to it. But I'm really hoping that this topic, and then I'm definitely going to finish up the golf paper, you know, in short order once I finish the dissertation, but probably Google Scholar, and then, you know, I guess LinkedIn, if you found me there, that's an easy way to do it. But I'm not really I feel bad saying this, but I know people like Twitter and I don't even know all those other things. I'm not going to pull out a Belichick quote here and misquote all what the social media sources are.
Snapface, something like that. Yeah,
I know. I love this.
That's okay, Mike. Don't worry about it.
I'm not on Snapface. We'll say that.
Yeah. Hey, what's your dissertation on, by the way?
So right now I've had a meeting today. It's so I'm doing it on selection bias. So that's one of the first parts, and then the second part of the dissertation, I'm looking at missing data imputation. So my advisors. And really that the selection bias is a missing data problem, but selection bias and using the Heckman correction. So I think a lot of people have probably heard about that. So it's just an extension of that, and then just doing a missing data imputation. So.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks much.
All right. So again, my guest today has been Michael Macchiarlotti of the University of Oklahoma. And at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Mike will deliver a talk titled Longitudinal Changes in Male Distance Running Performance. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Mike.
Thanks, Dr. Tapp. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. And just for the record, it's not Dr. Tapp.
It's not?
No, it's not. It's not. I've been trying to clear that up with you.
Honorary doctorate?
Nope. I'm just Scott. So I appreciate it though, but I can't live this lie any longer. It's just Scott, right? But anyway, on that note, thanks for listening today. And the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, June 21st at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details. And make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @analyticsconf. Thanks for listening.